You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for February 7th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from outside Bill Crystal's Vocational Education Training Program, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
He needs to take that fact-checking class again for the seventh time.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to stop him from getting a job.
Getting lots of jobs.
Yeah. And now he's working for ABC.
Original Project for New American Century scumbag, a Weekly Standard douchebag with David Brooks, has just been writing right-wing neoconservative trash for decades.
Well, and is responsible personally for the selection of Sarah Palin to the Republican ticket.
Some of you might remember when Rachel Maddow of MSNBC unloaded on Paul Wolfowitz.
Hiring Paul Wolfowitz to write an article about the future of the Middle East.
Yes. Yeah.
But this guy who's been wrong about everything should have no place. Right. You know, he can write cheesecake recipes if he may be qualified to do that, but he is not qualified.
And remember
to have a job writing about foreign policy in the Middle East since he has ruined it.
And the fate of and who was horrible. And she went through a list of his horribly, horribly smug, wrong predictions that got Americans killed. And of course, Paul Wolfowitz, due to his horrid failure at foreign policy, was given a job running the World Bank until he turned out he was giving his girlfriend money or whatnot, who was also a World Bank employee. And so he had to leave that job. But he's just wingnut welfare 101, you know, case textbook example of that. And she unloaded on him. MSNBC's Rachel Maddow rattled windows in Peoria with the detonation of, why are you hiring this completely wrong asshole? Flash forward to Morning Joe on MSNBC. And who's sitting at the table but Bill Crystal, who has been more wrong about more things than Paul Wolfowitz, who has been more inexplicably unemployed by everybody, who went from writing horribly, horribly fascistic jackbooted pieces for Weekly Standard to Time Magazine.
Well, and the reason we're not invading Iran is we don't have the will.
We're not invading everybody we should invade, because if we had the will to do it, said Bill Crystal. When asked, well, how do you plan to pay for this? You know, the troops are exhausted. We've used up our military. We've burned through our credibility. And
we just don't have the will to do
it. If we just had the will to do it, we could do it.
Mein Führer!
Yeah, I can fly. Of course, I can. You know, what he means by that is, I'm happy to send your children off to die for my crazy schemes.
And I'll sit in my think tank and make money off of it through my investments in the military-industrial complex.
Because I'm an awful, awful, awful
I want to add to this, Driftglass, that in addition to this week, ABC's This Week
has hired him.
Hiring Bill Crystal this week. This is also the week that Dana Lash is subbing on The View.
Yes.
And ironically or not ironically, James Carville has been hired by Fox.
Yes.
As a full-time analyst.
And who do I see? And of course, those are all, you know, all presumably
safe. They're very safe.
Those are all occupied. That's all occupied country.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fox News, of course. You know, James Carville is married to one of the worst people on earth. and the incestuous relationship among that crowd. But there used to be this little tiny island of where you could just sort of go and say, I'm kind of safe here. You know, Air America used to be safe. And there's a little sliver of bandwidth at MSNBC that used to be safe. I mean, it was a joke. But frankly, MSNBC, I'm not particularly interested in much of anything they have to say anymore, because while Rachel Maddow will unload righteously on Paul Wolfowitz, I look at Crooks and Liars this morning. What do I see? But look who's on Morning Joe with Chuck Todd and the rest of the Morning Zoo crew. My God, it's Bill Crystal being treated with deference and respect and a carpet is being rolled out for him and treated not at all like the psychopathic war criminal that he actually is. And it's not like he's gone into the wilderness to repent his sins. He has always been awful. He just keeps getting work because Bill Crystal has friends in the media who will always make sure Bill Kristol has a job.
Well, and I think it goes the other way too. This goes back to the CBO report, actually.
Yeah.
Jobs versus willingness to work.
Yes. Yes.
Bill Kristol lives in Washington, D.C., and if you send a car for him to be on the air, he'll get in that car and come and be on the air. And that's what they need.
Sure.
Someone was asking me on email today about Nia Malika Henderson, you know, and does she contribute anything?
No.
Every time I see her on TV, it's an opportunity to learn nothing.
Yes. Wow.
But she fills the space.
Yes.
Of television time, and she looks right, and she keeps talking. Yeah. So,
well,
therefore, television needs people like her, apparently.
Well, and that theory.
And this is Morning Joe. I think Joe Scarborough is the Chris Christie of television in terms of having a very high involvement in who is on his show and what is said.
Yes.
So the fact that he is going to have Bill Kristol on.
Oh, and
it doesn't surprise me.
Bill Kristol on, so the both of them can sing the praises of Sarah Palin.
Yeah, yeah.
On my liberal television.
I don't think it's your liberal television, though. You weren't funding it.
No, I'm not.
It's Wall Street that funds those hours.
Yeah.
Particularly.
And I think I can safely predict that while the two or three people in the evening who are part of my liberal TV, the vanishing liberal media, will unhesitatingly nuke Paul Wolfowitz from orbit, mm-hmm. they're not going to lay a finger on the morning side of their own network.
No.
They're never going to lay in Joe Scarborough. They're never going to touch Bill Kristol as long as he's protected. They're never going to talk about David Gregory because he's sort of their boss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so, I don't know, predictable about our media. That's mm-hmm. what's so...
We need to move on.
Yeah, we do. This is depressing me. But
I did think it was funny this week in other media news to notice that, you know, I thought that what was going to happen with podcasting is all of us were eventually going to move to network radio or something.
Yeah, apparently not.
Apparently it's the opposite direction. Everybody's coming our way to podcasting from home.
Hey, we got a podcast.
Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, Stephanie Miller's got a podcast.
Her, by the way, we love Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, she's got a video podcast.
She's now got a, from her house, right? She's in her house. So, first of all, that's unfortunate that all of us are moving in that direction instead of outward. But, and let's give her a free plug. She's going to be in April out with her crew doing the Sexy Liberal comedy tour in Chicago. And we were there at one time.
We were. We danced in the aisles.
So we danced in the aisles. And that's a fun show. So if you get a chance to see the Sexy Liberal comedy tour, go see that. Free plug, Stephanie. We're not dissing you.
No.
There was a wonderful article in The Observer about Andy Berowitz and Twitter. He used to be the king of Twitter. He used to tweet all the time. And I do recommend this short article on why he abandoned Twitter, mostly because it didn't pay and was taking over his life. Mm-hmm. and he didn't like his position in this barter economy.
Yes.
There was an actual mainstream newspaper that asked him to tweet the Oscars.
Live tweet the Oscars.
Live tweet the Oscars.
For free. For nothing.
We'll mention your website if you
want
for us.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't like my place in this barter economy.
Yeah. And I.
It does go back to that great video of Pay the Writer.
Harlan Ellison. Another person who gets lavishly paid is a guy named Glenn Beck. And you might remember 5 minutes ago when the entire Morning Joe segment was devoted to lavishing praise on Glenn Beck for repenting of his horrible sins and admitting that he sort of was somehow partially responsible for destroying the country and ripping everybody to pieces. And he's really kind of sorry.
Being divisive, yes.
This gave the Squint and the Meat Puppet on on Morning Joe a chance to do an entire segment on bipartisanship and how the extremes on both sides. Isn't it a shame? And Glenn Beck's doing this from a position of strength. And isn't it awesome? And finally, I, you know me, no one's been more critical of Glenn Beck than I have. But Glenn Beck has really seen the light, and thank God. And now this is an excuse to talk about the extremes on the left and people on the left and how the extremes on both sides are really awful. Well, that was about 5 minutes ago. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Glenn Beck is back saying that Obama will throw opponents into internment camps.
On the radio, he says this.
Which was, I must say, 100% predictable. The only person who didn't see this coming down Michigan Avenue was Joe Scarborough. And Joe Scarborough, I'm sure, will shed a few crocodile tears and said, but he will learn nothing. Joe Scarborough
isn't going to put that quote from Glenn Beck on the air. No. I don't think.
I don't know.
It's not an opportunity to talk about bipartisanship. So.
But it's, again, Glenn Beck rakes in a massive amount of dough, grifting people.
Yep.
Joe Scarborough rakes in seven figures being a douchebag.
$99,000 a week? Yeah.
Yeah. And at the bottom of that food chain are interns asking Andy Borowitz to give it away for free.
Tweet for free. Yep. Yeah.
Could you just do it for free so I could, you know, go back to my boss and say I did this job?
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
We are working hard, many people in this community, to on a motion to raise some taxes to pay for schools, because schools in this area, and I'm sure all around the country, have faced nothing but budget cuts since 2008. And it's gotten to the point where they've cut out all the fat years ago. They've been cutting meat for a long time, and now they're cutting bone. And the youngest child's school, I wanted to point out, had a fundraising day for the treats that they give out when children behave. Uh-huh. They give out bookmarks and some of the things are no-cost items, like lunch with the principal. You can buy an opportunity to take out an extra library book that week. So they do make sure that there are things that really don't cost them anything but are privileges. But in addition to that, they have a certain amount of toys or treats or reading-related items, educational stuff, calculators, you know, things that kids want and can use. And they give out stars for good behavior, and then you can take them on Wednesday mornings to the Star Store and get something fun. Mm-hmm. And they raised money. They wanted to raise money to get stuff for the Star Store.
Uh-huh.
And the way they did it was to have a pajama day where anyone could wear pajamas to school. But for the privilege of wearing pajamas to school, you had to bring in a $1 donation.
$1.
$1 to the what they call the PBIS, the educational, I forget what PBIS stands for, but it has to do with discipline and responsibility, and buy these little trinkets for kids. And they raised over $400 in one day, which is more than enough to carry them through the year for this project. And it reminded me very much of how we raise money for this podcast, you know, $5 a time. And really, if you don't think your $5 donation makes a difference, think about pajama day. You can listen to this in your pajamas and pay $5 for the privilege. Mm-hmm. We appreciate your donations. I want to talk about schools a little bit, because the reason we're recording this on Friday morning is schools have been out for not just us, but lots of people around the country. And I found it really instructive this week to see where people divided, because people are very passionate about whether their kids should be home from school or whether their kids should be in school.
Yep.
Based on what does school provide for them? New York City kept their schools open because of lunch. You know, that this is where kids eat during the week. And if they don't have lunch at school, they can't eat that day. Springfield, where we live, the school district where we go, in part closed their schools. I mean, Wednesday they closed their schools because of snow. Thursday they closed them because of cold.
Uh-huh.
And actually, they probably should have closed them today because of cold also.
Yeah.
But they didn't. High poverty district.
Because we called them and begged them because we have to do the podcast.
Well, I think a lot of parents called them and begged them because they have to go to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And kids, you know, the schools provide daycare for school-age children. That's a part of what's going on. But, you know, this is nearly every school in the district. I believe the only school in the district that is not high poverty is the gifted magnet schools.
Yeah.
And that's where the doctors and lawyers send, you know, their kids.
Uh-huh.
And so that brings in the whole question of what is gifted. Does gifted simply mean you were born into a house where there are books in the home, so you test well? You know, that gets into a whole nother conversation. But the rest of the schools in this district are all Title I schools, which means they get extra funding from the federal government because over 40% of the students in those schools qualify for reduced or free lunches. And high poverty means for a lot of families that they do not have a car. I noticed when I was driving our kids to school this morning, the number of moms who were waiting in the car with their kids, because it was -2 when I woke up this morning and -8 when I got home. The temperature was dropping. But so moms, and it was all moms as far as I could see, were running their cars at the bus stop to keep their kids in the car to wait to go to school, which I find ironic. I finally put two and two together about 6 months ago, about October. And when I realized that I was doing that on rainy days and thinking, you know, I live here and they could be at school now.
That sign.
If you lived here, you'd be home now. If I live here and they can be at school now rather than sitting here with I'm still running the car. I might as well be driving to school. But I wanted to talk about not only schools as provider of the social safety net and schools as community organizers, which is happening here.
Yep.
But just this whole idea of school being so critical and underutilized, and that if we fund them, I personally think we should be serving dinner at schools.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Adults.
Yeah.
To adults. We should have pizza nights at least once a week, you know, but there's no money for that kind of thing. And that's the problem.
Well, and I think
I'm preaching to the choir, but
I have much more lavish dreams for schools.
Yep. They should have ESL and they should have GED classes.
And if the school is focused in a particular area,
yep,
and has the equipment or teachers or whatever to teach that, mm-hmm, as an adult, you can go there in the afternoon or evening and be with your child and learn those skills too, if you don't have them, if you want them. But workplace skills. You can have a homework facility in the evening where you and your kids can learn together. You can serve dinner. You can have local restaurants come in and serve you food. You can have local restaurants come in and show you how to prepare food. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you could do with that building that you're heating anyway and that you're staffing anyway and is already built and sitting there. And it requires a certain degree of adult supervision.
Stability.
And funding. It requires money. There's really no way around that.
I want to talk about money. CVS made a decision this week to stop selling cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of news outlets talked about how they were leaving $2 billion on the table. I happen to think that CVS made a financial decision that will be not only in their long-term interest, but probably their near long-term interests.
Uh-huh.
Become a healthcare provider rather than a cancer stick retailer.
Yeah.
The future of money is in Lipitor, not Lucky Strike. You know, Gretchen Carlson over at Fox News, as Wonkette calls her, the smart one.
You know, just smart.
She wanted to know if, like, is that even legal for CVS to stop selling cigarettes? Isn't that like a requirement?
Yeah, isn't that the law? You have to sell smokes?
We're now expecting the Fox News Smoking for Freedom Variety Hour.
Yeah.
Starring Gretchen Carlson. They actually had to come out pro-smoking because Obama said something nice about CVS.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's just reflex now.
Yep.
Oh, and speaking of urban myths and money,
mm-hmm,
you know, you and I have some crazy socialist notions about where the money goes, what it should be spent on. Mm-hmm. My point is this. In our local gubernatorial race.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You can't get elected on the right without touching certain erogenous zones with your base.
Uh-huh.
Your base believes certain incredibly stupid, wrong things because they listen to Fox all day and they listen to hate radio and they believe certain things that it's just bullshit.
Uh-huh.
So one of our local Illinois Senate, gubernatorial candidates, Bill Brady, who has run for governor, I don't know, three times now.
Yes.
A lot of money, a lot of backing, a lot of this, a lot of that, says he's hearing from manufacturers, you know, that industry where people are, there's a job shortage and people are trying to get into manufacturing.
No, that he believes that.
No.
Does he?
Because he hears from manufacturers that people are not motivated to return to the workforce because they are, quote, enjoying their unemployment insurance.
Oh.
I know I enjoyed my unemployment insurance, all $400 a week of it.
Yeah.
When I was on unemployment. And
that was a lot. And that was a lot. That was high.
That was the maximum. Yeah. The maximum, I looked this up, the maximum unemployment benefits for 2013 weekly benefits for Illinois is $385 a week.
Yeah, that was
which is a fraction of a fraction of what I was making on a full-time job. Not even a rounding error.
Yeah.
That would have paid for nothing in my old life. That paid for gas and a bag of groceries. That is his assertion is that the people who formerly had decent full-time jobs, working and jobs with benefits and blah blah blah, are just blowing off opportunities to come back to work. So they can kick back in that $385 hammock and enjoy the good life, which is bullshit. And this is why it's bullshit. This I want to make this point, despite the fact that we're running a little long. I want to make this point very clear. This is like the fifth time I've heard this exact same bullshit argument from some conservative who was trying to appeal to a crowd.
Oh, Rand Paul makes it constantly. Yeah. Yep.
But specifically, he makes it about manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And I have been told this, lectured this by conservatives I know, and I've read it, and it's just this constant zombie lie that you can never kill. Now, what you have to know about manufacturing is that in some cases, especially in the auto industry, your unemployment is not the $385 a week that taxpayers that pay you because you paid into unemployment insurance or your employer did. What they're referring to when they say unemployment is what you negotiated in your union contract. Mm-hmm. That part of the part of what you get under your labor protection as a condition of your employment is when you're laid off. Remember, the term layoff used to mean we send you away for a while and then we bring you back when we need you. Is that you get to collect your salary while you're laid off. It used to be normal. It used to be your union benefit.
Well, because you only built cars to provide when sales were high. And it was cyclical. So when sales went down, you automatically shut down your workforce so that you didn't have overrun of inventory. Yes. It really is a management of workforce.
There are indeed some people in the manufacturing world and in other sectors as well whose seniority and status within their workforce makes them eligible to collect a decent wage while they are not working. And it might very possibly be true that those people are choosing to, I'd like to take a few more months off.
Yeah.
And it's part of, look, this is my contract. You agreed to do this, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. That is radically different than people who are on state unemployment, federal unemployment for $385 a week.
Or less.
Who are required by that system to look for work, who are required to send out resumes, who are audited. And if they fail to look for work, and if they fail to take a job that's offered to them, they lose their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But our conservative friends have conflated these two concepts because they really, really want to blame the victim. They want to blame poor people for poverty. They want to blame unemployed people for being unemployed. And you cannot get elected to a Republican high office in this country without subscribing to this bullshit theory of social mobility and that poor people want to be poor because they're lazy and the unemployed are unemployed because they're lazy.
And I got everywhere I am through hard work. And putting my chin to the grindstone. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't know.
Which is also a myth.
Well, and I don't know if we'll have time, but you know, we should probably touch on next week, if not this one, the big lie of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. Yep.
The Affordable Care Act, the reason, as I'm sure you all know by now, the CBO has said that it will eventually remove 2.5 million FTEs, full-time equivalents, from the workforce. What that means is, largely, a bunch of people who suddenly find they don't have to work until they die.
Right. Just to have health care. Yeah. Yeah.
They can leave. They can cut back their hours. They can go open up a business. And the people who are not locked into jobs, because I don't know when it became the patriotic thing to do to work yourself to death for a corporation that you hate just so you can have medicine for your children.
Mm-hmm. Or for yourself. I mean, this is where a lot of 50 and older who are ill
Yeah.
and should be on disability or should be taking early retirement or have a health condition that really requires them to not work as hard as they are, cut back their hours because they now have health insurance thanks to Affordable Care Act. But that was the Republican argument. This is what is so frustrating. This was the Heritage Foundation argument, was more people will be able to go out and start a business.
Yes.
And work when they want to work and make and contribute to the economy in a way that is personal choice and freedom.
We're taking this off their backs. And actually, we're making corporations, especially like car companies, more competitive.
Right.
Because
with
that
thousands these companies, because they provide health insurance to their people.
So there's all. But of course, because Obama's for it, it must be the end of the republic. Yeah. And so you get this.
And that's racism. And I know that Chris Matthews touched on that this week, just saying, you know, why do they hate this president so much? Is it because of who he is? And that absolutely it is. I want to talk a little bit about Chris Christie just for a minute.
Please.
John Stewart was making fun of the media holding off on passing judgment on Chris Christie and saying, well, you know, all the facts aren't out yet. There is no smoking gun, and not jumping to conclusions about Chris Christie. What's the deal?
A whole montage of people that let's wait till all the facts are in. Let's not.
All the facts are in. Really?
Yeah. Who are you people?
I mean, and to contrast that with the CBO headlines is perfect. You know, it's just exactly and the fact that facts don't matter anymore in
at
this
all.
At all. It's how you headline it. And does that work?
And again, do you tickle the ganglia of your base, of your Republican base? Because one of the things that I forget who I saw this yesterday complaining about, just from a political point of view, and I hate to reduce it to that, is that Democrats, especially liberals, let me just put that in as my personal aside, seem to be very slow on the uptake that facts don't matter anymore. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that leads us, I'd like to have you talk a little bit about Bill Nye.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But Chris, I just want to get back to Chris Christie and say, this is my personal theory. Chris Christie is a powerful guy.
Yeah.
He's governor of the state right next door to where you work. Chances are you live in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Or your family lives in New Jersey, or someone you know lives in New Jersey.
Oh, and just in terms
if you're in the New York media market.
Just in terms of gubernatorial power.
Yeah, he's one of the most powerful governors in the country.
Texas has a weak governor, for example. Yeah, yeah. But as the governorship is constituted in New Jersey, it is intended to be a monarchy.
Yeah, it is. It's intended to be a boss system, the way mayor of Chicago is.
Yes.
And these Irishmen this is how they run their government.
Right.
So in answer to John Stewart's question, who are you people? You know, the media people who are holding off on passing judgment on Chris Christie. Chris Christie is well known now and was before. I was certainly aware of it as one of the most vindictive mofos out there. Small-minded, petty, vindictive person. And
with the ability to back it up.
And if you think that there is a possibility that he's going to go to New Hampshire and figuratively throw his weight around.
Yeah.
And possibly still be the Republican front runner.
Yeah.
And you want your network to have a place on that campaign plane. You're not going to mess with Chris Christie.
No.
Yet.
Well, and even if you just want him to be a color commentator.
Yeah.
Be your go-to guy. Be somebody that you can call up and put on the air that will make viewers tune in.
Yep.
You don't ever want to piss him off.
No.
And so
who are these people? They are people who fear power.
And worship it.
And worship it.
Yeah.
And that's D.C. Beltway and New York City Beltway. And these media markets respect and fear power.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Jim Bridenstine? That's not how you say it.
No.
But it just crazy lady. It's another crazy lady
wanting
her country back and wanting the SOB to be impeached and then hung. And then, you know, that whole thing. And here's an elected official. This is the important part.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a member of Congress. Our Congress.
Huh?
Less than 500 people.
Who had a meeting
currently blessed with this privilege to serve the country in this way. And he just makes a joke out of it.
He's confronted by by one of his crazy constituents.
I think there were two women there. Yeah.
Yeah. Who
have listened to Glenn Beck a lot of the time and
Rush Limbaugh.
The internet.
And they know that Barack Obama is bringing
He's
a criminal. Who should be impeached if not perhaps executed?
Yeah, executed. Yeah.
Yep. Because he brings Muslims into this country to take over our freedoms
via commercial jet. I like that detail. But I wanted to add to that, you know, my fantasy this week is to out conspiracy theory them. If I had been sitting in the audience and said, oh, no, it's not that. Barack Obama, you know, the reason that they're so mad at Barack Obama and the Republican Party is he killed Osama bin Laden. And the deal was we weren't supposed to do that.
That's right.
George W. Bush made a deal with the Saudis that you're not supposed to do that.
Well, that's why they're so mad.
And just let it flow from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just have it like it's like a.
I want to have conspiracy theory. You know, the problem is that then you become a 9/11 truther. Right. And I don't want to go that far.
Well, then it's a dance off. You know,
it's a battle of the bands. It is.
And the point that behind this one congressman standing there like, as Charlie Pierce wrote, I think, an ice sculpture.
Yeah.
While this woman just raved on. Was not that this is a random person or a random event. This was somebody who has been carefully brainwashed by years and years and years. Yeah, exactly. This didn't come out of nowhere. This, you know, there's an infinite number of possible conspiracy theories you can spin on any subject. But the conspiracy theories that these people spin are always very narrowly gauged to Barack Obama, Muslim, America-hating, secret conspiracy, take my guns, gay. Always. That's always where they go. And that is the bandwidth that is supported and promoted by Fox News and hate radio and the Republican Party think tank machine and the rest of the apparatus. So the entire engine of the right is geared to producing people like this. And the whole trick of conservatism over the last 30 years has been make sure the crazy lady never gets in front of a camera because we can't let on the fact that we're breeding a generation of no-neck inbred morons and feeding them bullshit conspiracy theories just so we can get their money and their votes because that would make us look foolish. That would make us look dangerous. That would make us look, I don't know, un-American. But now the crazy people are now the cameras are everywhere and you can find all over the place the same clone of this woman wandering around Tea Party rallies, wandering around Republican conventions, wandering around town hall meetings, raving about the same crazy ass bullshit because they built that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to take any responsibility for it. So this guy didn't confront her. He didn't correct her. He didn't sit her down. He didn't call the Secret Service and say, someone here just threatened the life of the president. He just sort of laughed it off and went on to the next thing because he knows goddamn well that that's his core constituency.
Yep.
And that's why you have to keep tacking right, 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 right. On the subject of why facts stop mattering, this is one of my pet peeves this week was Bill Nye, the science guy, engaging a creationist in a debate. For some reason, lots of people thought this was a success. This was a good thing. He did great. He sure showed them up. And I couldn't disagree more. Bill Nye lost the debate the minute he entertained the possibility of sharing a stage with an anti-science nobody. The minute he granted him half of the clock, he granted him half of the credibility. He told all of the people who were following him, this person is credible enough to be on stage with me and take up my time debating an issue that is clearly settled science. There's nobody left to convince. This is the same argument.
I agree with you up to a point on that, Driftless, but I want to add to that that I don't think the debate should be or is, frankly, between creationists and scientists.
No.
I think the real problem is between people who call themselves Christians and people who are Christian.
Yeah.
And what we – and I'm – I'm just talking within school now, because
right.
those listeners who are atheist or non-believers or agnostic or in any way feeling that Christianity is part of the problem, I hear you.
Uh-huh.
And I know I've talked about that before. The reason I'm Bible bitch is because the Bible has so much in it that is just a problem and is not factual and was never intended to be a literally interpreted guide
history.
To
yeah.
life.
To history. Yeah. Certainly not science.
Yeah, exactly. I love a cartoon I saw on the internet this week of Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mount. And he said, "Now everybody listen up carefully. I don't want there to be four versions of this."
Yeah. Yeah. For those of you who aren't familiar with the text, there are four versions of it.
There are four versions of
it. One's called the Sermon on the Plains, right?
Yes, exactly, because he didn't climb the mountain.
No.
Yep.
So
Luke, he doesn't climb the mountain. In Matthew, he does. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's essentially a message that was carried on by mouth to mouth, you know, by an oral tradition.
Yeah.
And
aggregated.
Finally, someone wrote it down, and different people wrote it down different ways. And
yeah. Four different audiences.
Therefore, it's not a literal history of events as they took place.
Yes.
At any one time. And should not be read as such. And so, to me, and to a lot of people, this concept of, well, we have to believe that the earth is 6,000 years old because the word of God says so.
Right.
Is idolatry.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to go with that. Drift Glass.
Yes.
I want to talk to you about this long-term unemployment vote that happened this week.
Yeah.
And I want to end on Keystone Pipeline. Is that all right with you?
Fine. I would just add that to those of you out there who don't want to make Glenn Greenwald the story.
My
advice is quit making him the story. I have.
Well, it's very hard not to make him the story when he wants to be the center of attention. He spends a lot of time being Glenn Greenwald.
He does.
He's tiresome, exhausted by that whole.
Well, I have as
universe that revolves around Glenn Greenwald, not the universe that revolves around domestic surveillance issues.
No, it's a different matter altogether. And this is my only point. I'm taking a respite from critiquing or writing about anything Glenn Greenwald says, anything he says at all. I am taking seriously the charge that Charlie Pierce lays at the feet of people who obsess over the dramas and tragedies of Glenn Greenwald, that stop talking about him. He's not the story. If you write about him as if he's the story, that's your fault, not his fault.
Right.
Quit making Glenn Greenwald the story. All right. I'm taking you at your word, Charlie. I agree with you. Let's stop making Glenn Greenwald the story. And what do I see? I flip open Atlantic. Glenn Greenwald is the voice of the First Amendment. What do you think? Connor Frieder's door. I go over to Salon. Yeah, Glenn Greenwald is in the dramas of Glenn Greenwald. And all I have done for the last 2 weeks, the few times I've done this over the last couple of weeks, is write a column that said, I agree and sometimes respectfully, I respect and sometimes disagree with those who say, those who are tired, sick to death of the dramas of Glenn Greenwald being dragged into this important debate. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Please direct your comments to Connor Friedersdorf. Mm-hmm. Please direct your comments to, and I've given the name and address of the people who persist.
Well, and part of it is, you know, how do you approach a story like this if you don't approach it via harsh, vindictive personality wars?
Yeah.
It's boring, and that's why people's eyes glaze over when we start talking about NSA specifically, because you're getting into the real weeds of what is legal and what is not, and there are wonks that know that, know what the law says and perhaps what the law should say.
Yes.
And, you know, getting into whether we're spying. There was a tweet from Glenn Greenwald that was so full of false equivalency that it really just kind of spilled over like one of those baking soda volcanoes.
Where he
said that the Russian spy too is the new Saddam also tortures.
Yes. Well, you know, calling again, I have made it a point. I made it an absolute conscious decision not to do anything that's particularly critical or uncritical. I did point out that calling attacks on Edward Snowden McCarthyite, perhaps Glenn's not familiar with the term McCarthyite, because McCarthy accused innocent people of stealing state secrets and then going to Russia and giving them to the Russians. If you're dealing with someone who actually has stolen state secrets, actually has
gone to the Russians,
you can call that unfair or slander or a result
of press conferences from Russia about the secrets that he has.
You can call that criticism of that person a lot of things, but to say the McCarthyite slanders against no, he did all the things that McCarthy accused people of doing. So maybe you should use that term.
I'm worried that we're making Glenn Greenwald the story.
I'm sorry. Okay, and you're please cut this. My point was only this. My point was only this. I decided for a period to take seriously the people who keep insisting that the problem with criticizing Mr. Greenwald, bringing him into the picture, is that clouds what is an important story. I agree with that. With personal drama and vitriol and the sort of volatile nature of his accusations, which are sometimes wild and sometimes not true. I agree with that. So I have meticulously I have only critiqued people who do that for the last couple of weeks. And my comment section and my email box is filled with people who demand to know why I keep beating up poor Glenn Greenwald, which is precisely what I'm not doing. I'm doing the opposite. I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying if you have a problem or is it that you only object to stories that criticize Glenn? You seem to have no problem with stories that laud him, that make him out to be a martyr, that make him the central character of the story. But as long as it's positive, as long as you can feel good about the outcome of that story, that's okay. It's only when you criticize that process that you're being unfair. So I'm simply holding people like Charlie Pierce to account for the things that they themselves have said. Charlie, if you object to people writing about Glenn Greenwald and making him the story, you need to write to Connor Friedersdorf and tell him to stop doing it. The end.
Mike Rogers is the headliner on ABC this week,
though. Of course he is. And the punchline is
found out. Yeah. I had a line for a very short 10-second spot for radio or TV, which is one Republican vote kept the long-term unemployed from receiving needed benefits this week.
Yep.
Was it yours? Was it your Republican vote that did that? So people need to stop voting Republican if they want change. I'm just going to say that.
And if you're a Democrat running against one of these people, here's my free advice to you. Mm-hmm. Go to your local employment office. Mm. Go into the line of middle class, ordinary folk just like you, and ask them. Stand in line with them as they wait for their auditing, for their benefits, for some job training, or some hope to come down the pipeline. And ask them how they feel about their elected representative calling them lazy. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? Your elected representative called you lazy, went on television, called you lazy, and said the reason you're unemployed is because you want to be unemployed. That's why he decided to kick you in the throat and kick you off unemployment. Because what you need, what you really need, is one more boot to the head.
But here's the problem, Driftglass. The minute you put one African-American face on that ad.
Yep.
You've lost your message.
Sure. Of course you have.
And that's the problem. We have too much racism in America. Too much white supremacy. Uh-huh. If you get all white people, all white middle class professionals online, and why should you have to cherry pick American citizens to talk to about unemployment? You know, this is the thing that happened with Melissa Harris Perry says, 15% unemployment, we'd be dancing in the streets in the black community. And I've said this before, it must just gall the president to have to talk about income inequality.
Right.
We know who is facing income inequality as a special case. It's not his people. It's our people. It just ticks me off. And now I'm going to be ticked off at the president for a minute. Keystone Pipeline.
Yep.
I don't know if you noticed, but in addition to the president dipping his toe in the oily soot of the Keystone Pipeline this week. Ed Schultz.
Yep.
Said, we should build it. And here in Springfield, the AFL-CIO lobbying office has a big, huge sign across the front of it. saying, vote yes on Keystone XL.
A lot of welding jobs.
So,
a lot of steel jobs.
A lot of union jobs.
Uh-huh.
A lot of skilled union work.
Yep.
And we're killing our planet to do it. Uh-huh. So, I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted.
Well, why don't you read a nice letter from a listener?
Oh, yeah.
That'll bring you back up.
Well, I did love Chris Hayes talking about our addiction in relation to, you know, oil is the heroin that we oil and coal are the heroin that is killing us. And we
to kick it, it's going to take, you know, a while.
It's going to take treatment.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And see, the thing is, we're not going to get off a carbon-based energy economy anytime soon. But we can move in that direction with much more expediently than we currently are.
But here's the problem, Driftglass. That oil is going to be burned by the Chinese.
Of course it is.
And the Indians.
Of course
it is. East Indians. Not. We're moving in the direction of going toward fracking and natural gas instead of oil and coal. But other countries aren't. And we're becoming a dirty oil exporter.
Yes, we are. And
that's the problem.
And we
know what the air looks like in some parts of China because we've seen you can cut it. You know,
and if we devoted the time and energy and money to a full-on alternate energy crash program, I'm solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, you name it, fusion. And took that as seriously as the Manhattan Project and said, as I've said before, spend every dollar you spent on the military, you spend the dollar on researching. And then you start mass producing and giving and driving the price down so low that it becomes cost effective because the government props up the price. There's an actual subsidy for cranking out clean energy sources. Then you could begin to seriously say, look, we are going to continue burning carbon for 14 years because we can't shut the global economy down while we transition. But at the end of this time, that filthy process that should never have been allowed to get this far will be done. And we will be doing this other thing. And it will be cheap enough to export. It will be cheap enough to hand to the countries that are currently polluting. But we're not doing that. I would take seriously a discussion of what we have to do to transition, if there were any fucking hint that we were transitioning anywhere. But there's not. There's just this sort of gauzy faith in the free market, and let's just keep drilling until, well, maybe the next election. And that's unforgivable. Barack Obama, I'm talking to you.
Yep. And there is a lot going on with the drop in the cost of solar, by the way. We don't have time to talk about that, but We have a wonderful letter.
There's too much news, Blue Gal.
We have a wonderful letter that I want to read. We get a lot of wonderful letters, but I read this one out loud to you, Driftglass, and you said, oh, we need to read this one on the air because it's got so much substance in it. Blue Gal Driftglass, you sealed the deal when you asked for $1 a year for each year you have podcasted. I thought it reasonable and compelling. I listen to several podcasts, and this is the first time I have contributed. Not that I do not think I should. I always mean to, but then I forget. I listen regularly to Best of the Left, Slate, and You Two. That's a good list.
Yeah.
I listen to others occasionally. I am sorry you are struggling financially. I am about 10 years older than you.
Yeah.
I just made it through before Reagan began tearing apart our safety net. I graduated college in 1974 debt-free. I worked in high school saving my money. I went to a state college in Connecticut, and I was able to put myself through college working summers. I became a teacher, and I retired with a pension. Pensions are a thing of the past thanks to the new Republican ethic. The private sector's jobs have gone overseas, so now they are aiming to take away state and federal employee perks. And a race to the bottom, yes. And I was pointing out to someone on email yesterday that we need single payer for pensions too. That this idea that some people should be exempt from Social Security, that we're no longer at that point. I am so fortunate. I am no longer in the workforce trying to compete for all the low wage benefit free jobs. Yes, you are.
Yep.
And this is what we're talking about with the CBO report.
Yeah.
I mean, why would someone want to work three jobs with no benefits?
Exactly.
Just so they can buy health insurance with, you know, pre-existing condition rider on it. That's just absurd. All right. Thank you for speaking truth to power and trying to make a better world for the next generation. I hope you inspired many people like me and you got a small windfall of congratulatory anniversary gifts. I wish you only the best, Gene.
Thanks, Gene.
Thank you, Gene. And a lot of it is generational, and there are, you know, what does that comedian say? I'm a white guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Louis C.K.
Louis C.K.
Yeah. It's always good to be a white guy. Any point in history, I go back. Oh, yeah, we have a chair waiting for you.
Waiting for you.
Wouldn't want to travel to the future, though.
No, it's going to be. It is. The present. Yeah. The present for white guys over 50 who are unemployed is really hard.
Well, and the flip side of that sentiment is what I get from a lot of older conservatives I know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is they just want to get out and retire and play golf before it all goes to shit.
Yeah.
And they don't care who suffers. They don't care who – they will buy any bullshit ideology, any conspiracy theory that lets them get
– guilt-free.
Into the ground, guilt-free, in luxury because they earned it, because they deserve it. And you know what? These are people who worked hard. I don't begrudge them any of that. But the theory is – fuck the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want mine now. And if I have to spend the resources of the next 100 years to make myself comfortable today, well, that's my right as a goddamn American, you mm-hmm, communist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal. Is I want to get out and under the dirt before it all goes downhill because I know it's going to go downhill. And so –
well, and pressing one for English is an inconvenience in that world. I mean, that's really what – it gets to is
exactly.
I don't want to have to do anything that doesn't make me the center of the universe.
And that means the poor are poor because they're lazy, and the unemployed are unemployed because they don't want to work. And other theory,
we need to build a wall around America for my people. And we didn't even get into, you know, the abandonment of immigration reform by the Republican Party.
No. And the giant, the big lie, the lawlessness of the commander in chief, because they don't trust him to enforce the law. He can't be trusted. He's a lawless.
The fact is, they don't trust their base to understand anything except keep the Mexicans out.
And let's face it, if the black guy in the White House is for it, we're against it.
Yep.
Period. All right.
Next week is our Valentine's Day show, and we would like you to write into us and let us know politically what you love. Let's be positive. I know we're ending on such a downer note. Debbie Downer. And I love technology. I love how it's allowing us to get to know one another. And so let us know what you love. We know you love Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, we do.
Big Valentine to her. So
we know you love demographics. Because eventually all these people go away. And they're replaced presumably by people who think it's normal to live in a multicultural society where if you're gay, that's fine. I don't care. What do I care?
Everyone speaks English as their first language, which actually is pretty constant throughout America.
Yeah. I don't care that you can play Minecraft. I don't care who you marry. It's icky. I don't care about that. And where the plight of the poor is something that is something to be ashamed of and acted upon as opposed to a bludgeon to terrify the middle class that you need to work until you drop lest you become one of those people.
Yeah.
So I'm a great believer in demographics. I believe in the future. I still believe in the future. I won't be around to see it, but I hope to be a little part of helping to make it.
There you go. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Dickens, as in Charles Dickens.
Really?
And Dickens is quote unquote feral. We know those kind of cats.
Yeah.
This Dickens is fed nightly by one of our listeners, including the occasional piece of turkey.
Yeah.
Our listener writes in, sorry about the poor quality of the photo. He's still a little skittish around people. And that's why I had to take his picture through the glass door, to which we're sure Dickens replied, don't judge my lifestyle.
Yeah.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We love hearing from you. Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, first of all, Blue Gal will take a month or more to write back to you.
Yeah.
Sorry. It just, I sent out the last of my Christmas cards this week. I just want everyone to know. No kidding.
And you're so much better at that than I am. So.
I wrote on the back of them going for the gold in the outrageously late Christmas card competition.
Yeah. But we're still more prepared than Sochi.
If you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. And again, those postal unions that get the mail out when it's below zero. We love you guys.
We love you guys and women. We love the men and women who bring the world to our door every day.
So, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are really going to miss Pete Seeger and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
We apologize to our readers for the lack of a science fiction university this week because we live in a science fiction universe and everything around you is already science fiction, from cloning to space programs to Chinese drones dying on the moon. You already live in a science fiction universe, so hey, although let me
personal computers the size of a telephone.
Personal computers that will fit on your desk? That's crazy. That'll never happen. Uh-huh. Personal communicators on your wrist that show pictures and stuff? That's Dick Tracy nonsense. But you know what? For a little science fiction university bonus, I would like to just point out that some of our conservative friends, David Frum and David Brooks, on the same day got it into their head for some reason. I'm guessing they saw the same private Aspen Institute presentation or TED Talk or something.
Yeah.
To talk about how robots are coming for your jobs. And have been very exercised about the fact, in David Frum's case, that robots – before we talk about immigration, we should talk about robots.
Okay.
Two subjects about which he knows nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And David Brooks was – since David Brooks is David Brooks, he wants to talk about how, since none of this disruption and chaos will ever personally affect him in any way, he gets to sort of float in high Earth orbit and talk about – all the traits you should have if you want to survive the robot apocalypse.
You should be more like David Brooks.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, although David Brooks has the job in America that could most easily be replaced by three lines of code.
Oh, I think that's why, you know, the Tom Friedman column generator is so popular. It's easy.
It's so easy to do. It really is. And so as someone who pays for a mansion and God knows what other perks and perquisites come his way, David Brooks writing advice columns to people who are looking for work in the economy of brilliant machines is too rich. But what I would suggest, if you're interested in the subject, is pick up a copy of a book called Player Piano by Kurt Vonnegut.
Kurt Vonnegut, yes.
Published in 1952.
And it's about our robot overlords, isn't it?
Well, it's about automation taking over your jobs.
Yeah.
And how the system would work great if it weren't for those fucking people. People mess everything up. A, it's Kurt Vonnegut's first published novel, I believe. But B, it is one of many, 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 a huge genre of science fiction that has been written. The Midas Plague by Fred Pohl, for example. Pohl and Kornbluth, the space merchants I've talked about before. It's just a raft of writing that was done in the 50s and 60s and certainly onward about automation is coming for your job. The capitalist system is coming for your life. You're going to end up as a cog in a great machine that doesn't give a shit about you. Maybe we should do something about that. Again, my motto on my blog is I don't try to predict the future. I try to prevent it, which is a line from Ray Bradbury. And it's just very interesting to me some days to see what people are suddenly alarmed about and then go to my mind palace, my bookshelf mind palace, and pull out a copy of a book that's 60 years old that talked about this in great detail in a very prescient way decades ago and was sort of science fiction, And now it's real. And now the same people who frankly are collaborators in the Davos system of disruptive capitalism and are most benefited by it are the ones who are offering advice to us peons on how we can survive in their new world.